Residents living here just around the corner from Midway Avenue say they can't believe that a double shooting could have ever happened here, just one day after police found two bodies in the area.
Oftentimes when we look at our jurisdiction, we look at the boundaries of our jurisdiction. And I think what this shows today is that those boundaries are really just lines on a map.
I don't know why my voice is so high. That's what I take away there.
I you sound like you're six.
Also, how many times are you going to say jurisdictions in one sentence?
Well, once that's the kind of word that once you get it, you want to use
like,
it.
You're like, I'm going to keep using it. Right?
I don't know if I could spell it or not, but I certainly know how to say it. I thought it was good to
That. You sounded like you knew what you were talking about.
Yeah. Well, you sounded like you were reporting what you had facts to report. So I think both of us can say, I don't know, when even was that?
I think I pulled that press conference from, oh gosh, it had to have been earlier on when you were a chief. Because there were chiefs in there who have now done like time in prison standing behind you from other municipalities.
Yes.
There was like multiple chiefs there.
Sure.
And I'm like, oh, these are like ghosts from the past. It was earlier
so it was
on, I think, in your.
Ago.
It was a long time
right.
ago. Yeah, yes. I mean, not that long. You're not that old, but yeah, it was from your earlier days of being chief of police.
Got it. And that must have been that press conference I had on some traffic where we were talking with other people.
Of course, you'd remember. Chiefs. You're like, oh, actually, I remember. Do you remember what you were wearing?
I do not. I'm going to say uniform.
You were wearing a white shirt.
Okay. Yeah. So police uniform. So that would make sense.
That's fine. If you don't know who I'm talking to, Gary McNamara, former chief of police in Fairfield, Melissa Shekatoff. The clip of me earlier is during my earlier reporting days. At the time, it was News 12 Connecticut. And actually, Gary was chief of police during that time.
In Fairfield, Connecticut. And
yes.
So I was going to say that sounded like you were like 6 years old. That was
I was 22.
How long have you been reporting for that you?
15 years.
Okay. So
do I sound older now?
You sound
a little bit more.
Yeah, you sound. I'm not walking
Watch your
into
words.
That one.
Yeah.
I'm not walking into that one. You sound good. So let's put it that way. That sounded great, and you continue to sound great.
Wow.
On the radio work that you do on a regular basis.
Wow.
But boy, that's a blast to bring it all together.
Right. But it's interesting, and the reason that we decided to play that is because of this sort of idea of why we even wanted to start the Beat and the Badge. Which, by the way, because I had some people in the office say, what is with that? What is beat in the bet? What is happening? And, beat, we're referring back to like a reporter's beat, a focus for a reporter. And obviously the badge referring to you've been in law enforcement for how many years?
Yeah, over 30 as a police officer, and kind of continue to kind of dive into it a little bit. But I think, so it's the beat reporter and, the police work. And from a police perspective, especially dating back years, that's what we'd have. We'd have those beat reporters, the people that were with pad and paper who would show up at crime scenes, show up at different events, and they'd be the ones that are basically covering the beat. And then obviously from a police perspective, you'd be looking for those police officers to provide that information to you.
And it's kind of one of the things that early on in our friendship, because professionally, Gary and I have kind of worked on and off together, I guess, is how you kind of look at it. I don't know. We've professionally crossed paths many times.
We've crossed paths on yellow crime scene tape.
Right.
Yeah.
But the way that we handle what's happening behind the crime scene tape is very different, which is interesting. And I think it's just two very different perspectives, which is where we kind of came up with this concept, if you will. Why are you looking at me like that? Am I wrong? Isn't that
I'm looking at you because you're talking, and that's normally what I would be doing.
Okay,
I'm listening.
Fair.
Listening with my ears and looking with my eyes. But yeah, I think that's kind of what it comes down to, right?
Yeah.
Is that we and police officers and reporters oftentimes are impacted by events that occur in our communities around the country. And this gives us an opportunity now to look at it and use our experiences on different topics. So that's really where it comes down to the beat and the badge. And we're going to be talking about, I imagine, we haven't really talked about what we're going to be discussing, so I look for your approval on it. But apparently we're going to be talking about, we're going to be talking about those things, crime and impacts and what have you, and to bring those different perspectives together. I don't think it's ever really been done or really looked at, because we see things, while we may be looking at things the same, we may be looking at the same things, we're seeing them from a different perspective. And that's really what's powerful.
Well, and I think there's a skill set that comes with law enforcement that is, you know, so selfishly, the radio show that I do in Connecticut, Gary was a frequent guest for a long time and still is a guest on my radio show. And what I was noticing was I would ask you questions about, you know, what do you take away from this case or what do we learn from this? I think it's one of the first things I learned from you was that instead of just kind of looking at the surface, the details, what was the crime, what happened, who was impacted, like the who, what, where, when, why. But going beyond it, what are the lessons you take away from it? Because every crime is not just supposed to be sort of, you know, gossip or what you talk around the cooler about and then walk away from it. But what do you actually learn from it? And that sort of, to me, then launched me to ask questions about, well, okay, so how do we have deeper conversations about this? And I mean, to your point, Gary, we're talking about crimes across, I feel, a lot of different pathways. So, you know, domestic violence is something, and stranger danger, and online, like, I mean, just everything. And I just found that we were having these conversations that I wanted to get your perspective on from a law enforcement standpoint, but then from a reporter standpoint, kind of what questions I'd be asking as well. And it just felt the two kind of came together a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think because what we both have learned is that both of our jobs, while different, you know, the beat and the badge are different, but in some ways they're very similar. And I would look at it from this perspective that because we're so busy and because we're trying to cover so much, both of us, we go an inch deep and a mile wide because you have to. So you can only really dig a little bit below the surface. You get the information from a police perspective. You solve the crime or don't solve it. You make an arrest and then you move on to something else. And from a patrol perspective, that's really what you're doing. You're responding, you're solving as much as you can and then moving on. And we'll talk more about that with specific cases. But I would imagine that same concept from a reporter perspective, that you're only able to go an inch deep and a mile wide.
Right, because we have to further the story. So that's like one of the most common things in journalism is you could do, if a case breaks, you're at the scene, you do the initial, but then how do you keep that case relevant in the news? And that's where they say further the story. And what I realized is this is something that we could be doing pretty consistently because unfortunately, crime is inevitable. But instead of, again, just looking at what the news is going to tell you, which is the who, what, when, where, why, which is helpful, you know, going beyond that. And I think even as parents, so you're a parent, I'm a parent, the idea of, you know, how do we feel more control or how do we feel we have more control over instances or preventative measures when it feels like the world is out of control? And I think just for me personally and having conversations with you, like one of the episodes that's going to come out in the next couple weeks is The Kinda Knows, which is something that Gary taught me a long time ago and is one of my favorite conversations we've ever had. Because it's so logical. Right. And once you break down what a kinda know is and how it goes beyond stranger danger and kind of breaking what we think is a stranger and who could be a threat to our kids, it just makes so much sense for the average person. And it gives you sort of that relief of, oh, okay, that's how I have a conversation with my kid. Or, oh, that's how I handle a situation that's out of my control. That's kind of the point.
Right, right. And you can't unsee it once you understand it.
Right. The amount of people I've told kinda knows to are like, wait, that's so brilliant. I'm like, cool, listen to our show.
Yes, and you will find out
listen
more.
Listen to our show.
But you've just teased up the kinda know episode. But I think that, that's really what it comes down to is we leave a lot of meat on the bones or you know, like we just leave a lot of information out there.
Yeah.
And we know that crime or incidents that occur around the country or that we hear about that may make the national news, maybe just a local to a certain area or jurisdiction. I just wanted to get that in there again.
You really love that word.
I do.
You
do.
Okay.
I think that we leave so much out there that we really want to dive into it a little bit more because there's lessons to be learned. We'll talk about some of the school violence incidents and we will dive into discussions throughout these conversations that people have never heard before.
Right.
Because while they're all the same in some regards, they're all real different. And mm-hmm. those are the key components that we all have to learn from. And, you know, one of the things I've said, and I think part of why we should be engaging in these conversations, and it's fallen into place really, really well, is that if I don't share my experiences and you don't share yours and parents don't share theirs and everybody doesn't share their experiences, they're just memories.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have experiences that we can learn from, whether it be how to avoid a car accident. As a 16-year-old, I remember driving and sliding on the ice. And if I don't tell anybody, boy, that happened. But I think from a crime perspective, to share some of the experiences that we both have.
Yeah.
Could be pretty interesting for people to understand.
Yeah, it reminds me of when we talk to the Better Business Bureau and they'll say, you know, don't just share if you were scammed on your Facebook page, because it only shares with the people who know you. But the rest of society has no idea that this scam is probably happening across the country. And that's sort of the idea, right? So you hear about these stories. Another thing we're going to talk about, as I mentioned before, is domestic violence. And, you know, I know that there's like a month dedicated to it. I know here in Connecticut, you know, Gary sits on a board that is for a nonprofit to help survivors and their families who have been touched by domestic violence. And we do I think we make a comfortable conversation out of something very uncomfortable, which is, how do you talk to your kids about healthy relationships, and sort of how do you get to a good place with your kids before, God forbid, domestic violence is a reality, versus just always hearing the story of a domestic violence case and lawmakers who are trying to fix a problem that's already there. And like, how do we fix kind of the next generation? How do we make those conversations more comfortable for families to have? And that's like one of my favorite conversations, because I think inevitably one of the things that frustrates me so much as a journalist is that we don't go beyond the surface. We like tell the story, we give the details, we make sure people are in the know, but then we kind of leave it at that. And yeah. And I get it. You know, part of it is because of however much commercial time we have to fill and what our time constraints are and whatever. But what I'm excited for with this show is that we can have very open, this is totally not edited, conversations where, you know, sometimes I'm asking you questions and you can feel that it's kind of like, yeah, you have to go there, or vice versa. Like, sure. Hey, what would you do, Melissa? And it's like, I don't know, Gary. Right. It's, you know, And I think we need more of that. We're so polished as a society sometimes and so corrected. But on the things that we should be talking more about, we just go silent. Like, if we don't have the exact answer, we just don't talk about it at all, which I don't think is the right thing to do.
Right. And I think things change, too. So I think that we can learn something, we talk about something, and then, you know, those facts and circumstances may change, and people will be left making an assumption that this is what occurred or this is how something occurred, when that information may have changed. And this just gives us an opportunity to do that on a more regular basis. But I think maybe we should, I don't know, maybe introduce ourselves.
Oh, do you want
to? I don't know.
I did say your name.
Yeah.
I also said my name. It's also in the beginning, but yeah.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's okay. Listen,
no, so do you want to kind of share?
You tell me, who are you?
Well, yeah. I think that, who am I?
You mean, how did you get into law enforcement?
No, I just think that. So I was a...
don't be scared. This is a safe place, Gary. It's just you and me.
Well, I think you might have thrown me off when you said it's not edited, but so let's just go for it.
It's not edited. Just go for it, okay? No one's watching.
So
everybody watching, please look away. Gary needs the floor.
So I did a...
you got this.
Yeah, so I did a 30-year career with the Fairfield, Connecticut Police Department. And, you know, one of the things that people have asked me in the past is when you're a police officer, or they ask police officers in general, is they want to know, like, why. And that's fine. And I remember my mom gave me a book on what they do all day. And it was a fire and police little book about what they're doing. And that kind of started it for me.
Do you still have it?
I do.
No way!
I absolutely 100% do.
Wait, you've never shown it to me.
I will. Yeah, on our next podcast.
Oh my gosh! Do you leave it under your pillow or something?
No, but I.
Oh,
I still
you hesitated.
I still read it often. I still have it.
That's
like,
so
like
cute.
If we were at my house right now, I could grab it right away.
Are you serious?
I know where it is. Yeah.
I love that for you. Okay, so, continue.
But they oftentimes ask what shaped you. You know, like, you know, what was your first call or whatever? And, you know, maybe I'll just share that perspective, because it was an interesting call. As a police officer, you know that you want to be a cop, and if you want to be a cop, you have to go to the police academy, and they train you all these different things, techniques, how to handle your firearm, how to drive safely, pursuit driving.
Yeah.
And they teach you the laws and how to treat people, which is the most important perspective of it. But you really want to, you know, like,
you want action. You want to be Batman.
That's exactly right.
Da-na-na-na-na-na-na.
Yeah, the grappling. You want to do all that. I'm Batman. So you're trained in that. So you can't wait until you get your mock and fake gun and you're doing all these different drills, clearing rooms and things. And then you get out of the academy. Obviously, a great experience to come out of the academy. And then you're on your own eventually. And I remember one of my first calls for service. It was in Fairfield, Connecticut. And it was about 11 o'clock at night. And it was a 911 call came in for a... And we know 911 dispatchers will take the call and provide the information. And the information they provided was a woman was screaming that she needed help at a laundromat and that I did not have a backup. So you instantly, you know, I'm new, so you can't wait to get there. And you respond and you're learning all, you are implementing all the training techniques that you learned. Mm. So I'm parking away. I'm scanning the area. I'm looking. I come out of the car and I know this is radio, so you can't really see it. You can, but I'm being very tactical, blading where my handgun is because there's a danger inside there.
Right.
And I'm walking towards the building, and I can see it's all lit up, and this woman comes running out screaming in a panic.
Gosh.
You have to help me. You have to help me. And I instantly tell her to get behind the car.
Right.
And this is my time. You know, I trained for this. I'm a police officer. I'm going to help her and save her from this evil person that must be in the laundromat. And as I make entry into the laundromat, tactically looking left to right, she's right behind me now. And I'm like, ma'am, you have to go back to my car and be safe.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And she's still there. She won't go.
What?
And I'm checking the...
this is wild. Sorry. You have to get to it.
I know, sorry.
You're freaking me out.
Sorry. So
no, you're fine.
But I'm
you're a good
tactically
storyteller.
Trying to clear the room.
Right, of course.
And she is becoming more and more impatient with me to the point where she grabs my arm and drags me down an aisle and says, just come over here. Here's the problem.
What?
And, you know, I'm obviously very tactical. Where is this evil person that she's
right.
calling 911 for? And she drags me down an aisle and points to a washing machine and says, there's the problem.
Wait a minute. What do you mean? What's the problem?
My $250 bath mat has been on the wash cycle for 3 hours and the edges are getting frayed.
That's not real.
It is real, 100%.
Oh my gosh.
100%. So I...
Did you want to quit that day?
Well, no, because I'm Batman. And
right,
I recognize,
of course.
So I...
Oh my
reached,
gosh.
I forced open the door because you couldn't get to the
plugs. So strong.
I forced open the door with water cascading out of this washing machine.
So brave.
And I rescued the $250 bath mat.
Snaps for you, Gar.
I know.
Wow.
Yep.
Gosh. I mean, I knew you were a hero, but...
Well,
oof.
Yeah. But it taught me such an important lesson as a police officer. Is that I don't get to define the crisis.
Mm, that's true.
And it's so important because that's what cops do. They respond to people's crisis. And this to me was not a crisis, but to her it was.
Right.
The car accident that our police officers respond to is not a crisis because they're probably responding around the country to thousands of car accidents or the burglary that happens at someone's house where they come home and things are broken into. Officers respond to thousands of burglaries. It's not a crisis for me. It's just another report. It's another investigation.
Right. You're just doing your job.
But it's a crisis for the person who's in it.
Mm.
And that taught me such a valuable lesson that I don't get to define the crisis. I can define the response, and I can do that hopefully professionally, but I don't get to define the crisis. Because if I started to define the crisis, I'm like, are you kidding me? What are you calling me for?
Right.
It's not a crisis. You don't call us.
Mm.
A burglary? Yeah. Here's the sheet. Here's the information. You got to respond. Get it for your insurance company. And then there's no comfort level or taking it seriously.
So. No, that matters.
Yeah.
It totally matters. That's probably why he became a chief of police. He's like a really likable guy or something.
I don't know. So do you have something within...
I don't know why I became a reporter or why I think you're a likable guy, but I'm saying that sarcastically.
Well, no, I wasn't looking for...
Because I can tell you why I don't think he's at first a very likable guy if you really want to go there.
Well, yeah, I guess you have to go there.
I mean, because honestly, my story is not as noble as yours. Like I said, when I was 5 years old and I was asked in kindergarten what I want to be when I grow up, I said a dog. That's what I wanted to be. There's nothing more than that. I think they've got a great life and they know what they're doing. And honestly, as long as they're living in a nice house, I think they got it
right. Yeah.
But then apparently you can't do that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I shouldn't speak because I don't know. I've never.
I was told to find a real job, kind of like in Step Brothers when the kid's like, "I want to be a dinosaur." And he's like, "You can't be a dinosaur." Yeah, you can't be a dinosaur. So had to figure that out. And when you know look at the few things that I like about journalism, I like to talk. I do like to connect to people, and I like to give voice to the voiceless. My younger brother is autistic, and I almost got kicked out of elementary school 3 separate times, Gary, mostly for standing up for my brother.
Really?
Yeah.
Good.
Punched a girl square in the nose in first grade. Almost got kicked out of the first grade, but she made fun of my brother.
Well, good thing you weren't a dog because you would have bit her.
I would have bit her and then I would have been put down. That would have been a whole different thing.
Yeah.
I'm telling you,
I didn't mean to go that dark.
Well, I'm just saying, listen, beating the badge, just saying. I got to report the news, got to report the facts.
Right.
So, no, I tried to take just the few things that I feel very passionate about. And one thing I do feel strongly about is it drives me crazy when average people are written off. Kind of to your point. You know, so I can't define what I think is newsworthy. It's what matters to in this case, my listeners on WICC in Connecticut. But even in television, I thought the stories that were more compelling for me were the average Joes who were looking for somebody to, you know, if it was a farmer advocating for, I need to be able to get, you know, some kind of tax credit because milk prices are so high, you know, whatever the case may be. That was more fulfilling to know that you're making an impact to help other people versus, oh my gosh, I landed an interview with the governor and I'm this big deal. Like I got celebrity. I never had interest in any of that. I think that's where journalism mattered to me. And that's just kind of carried on for a while.
It's funny because when you listen to your interviews and you listen to your morning show here in Connecticut, it kind of shines through too, because it's really like you provide anybody that you have on, and you have a wide variety of different people that you touch and have on to interview, it's like you're providing them value. Like you see them. You often say this to me because you know we should let people know that we're friends as well. And you oftentimes
barely that was hard to get to this point.
Yeah, barely. I know, we never went
you're
there.
Trying to like you know tell everyone how great I am, but it's because he's trying to make it so I don't you know throw him under the bus.
Right.
Do you want to tell them or should I?
I mean, you should probably tell him.
Why? Because it's mortifying the way you used to treat me when you were a chief.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. You could tell.
Okay.
I think you're better seated to do that.
So Gary and I sort of kind of crossed paths, but I didn't realize it like many, many, many much years ago because I grew up in Fairfield, Connecticut, where Gary was, you know, working for the police department. And my older brother, even though Gary doesn't believe it, my older brother, this was during a time in the early 2000s when cell phones were like brand new. You were still getting messages out through, remember Instant Messenger or AIM?
Yes.
Yeah. So do I. It was the best. It was the only way you could talk to people. And my, you know, love him, but my dingus brother would put, you know, messages out there and what was supposed to be only 10 people after a football game turned into like 100 people. So my mom would call the police on herself when my brother would have these massive parties that got crashed. And, you know, somehow got wind. Gary McNamara put 2 and 2 together. And then 10 years later, when I'm now this young, as you mentioned, sounds like my voice is cracking, reporter at News 12, Gary refused to even acknowledge me.
Well,
ever. For press conferences, if I wanted to ask a question, had the hand up, just would overlook me. If I was like, hey, Chief McNamara, I have a question. I need to talk. He'd always kind of write me off to somebody else, would never do an interview with me. And I was like, what is with this guy? I used to talk so much garbage about you with my photographers. I was like, this guy is
I don't like him.
I don't like him. He's not nice to me. And you were so nice to the other reporters. And it never clicked for me. I'm like, why does this guy not like me? And then a million years later, I start at the radio station I'm working at in Connecticut. And I see this same guy who's now retired. Apparently, he retired while I was working up at CBS.
Yes.
Anchoring.
Yep.
I missed that.
You did?
I did. I'm sorry about that.
No, that's okay. I didn't get a card, but apparently I wouldn't expect one.
I don't think you would have gotten one because I really didn't like you. And I see this guy giving like law enforcement expertise on all these different TV stations. And I'm like, this guy. So I just sort of randomly emailed you one time. I think you still have it.
I do.
You do?
I don't have it in front of me, but yeah.
No, I know. Let's
put it in perspective. I still have the police book my mother gave me, so there's
true.
Very few things
that's
that
fair,
I will throw
actually.
Away.
That's yes. facts. That's facts. So he has it, and I was just very professional. Hey, Gary, I'm sure you don't remember me. I used to work at News 12 a million years ago. We really didn't work too much together. I'd love to have you come on. You sound really great on the X, Y, and Z stations or whatever. And so Gary starts to come on my show. He sounds great. We never address the fact that Gary blatantly ignored me. And I think finally, a couple of years ago, I was like, can we please talk about the elephant in the room, which is you never liked me. And you're like, well, can we talk about the fact that we had to bust your parties over and over? And I'm like, it wasn't me. It was my brother.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean,
no,
that's,
it's true.
That okay,
it wasn't
okay.
me.
All right. So, yeah. So we've
have moved- we?
I thought we did until this conversation. Maybe we really haven't moved on, but
no, we have.
But yeah,
it is so, funny.
It is funny
because Gary and I have like crossed paths without even knowing it over.
That's right.
So I was 14 when my brother used to have those parties. So yeah, we're talking 20 years, man.
Underage drinking.
I wasn't underage drinking.
Okay. See, so we haven't really closed the book on it. But
no, you have to get all cop on me. Don't do that. I thought we were past that.
We are past it.
We
find ourselves now. I mean, really, we've had these conversations on air, but also conversations off air as our friendship, just to kind of talk about how we can really bring all that together and have these real good conversations. And I think that's what we're doing. And I think it's about time.
So yeah. Full disclosure, Gary's literally like my ride or die. He's like my best friend. So
yeah, right back at you. You are.
I was a little nervous you weren't leaving me hanging there. But you're gonna say, I know. Lucky
I know.
You. It's like, no,
so,
Gary, you have to say me too.
Well, me too. Me too, Melissa, which is great because I think that shows that, goes back to what you said. Everybody has value. And see, at the end of the day, you finally found my value.
I just wanted you to call on me.
Well, I am. So we're beyond that now. And
we are.
I think it's really good. And I think that's the whole point of this is to really have these conversations. These are tough conversations that we're going to have, as you know. And yet we can do so in a way that maybe we get the information off in a way that is still kind of fun.
Yeah. We're going to do the beat and the badge. It's going to be great.
And the badge. Yes.
Yeah. I'm the beat, by the way.
Yes, I know. I figured that out.
And, I was telling them, not you.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
And then, okay.
That makes you the badge.
Yes, gotcha. Well, that's the only one left.
I guess you could be and, but yeah,
yes.
You're the badge.
So I'm the badge, you're the beat, and we're going to have these really, really good discussions, and I think that we're going to make a difference. To your point, the topics that we're going to talk about, but we're going to talk about a lot of topics, the kind of knows, the strangers, and some things that really, I think, are going to provide value that people oftentimes don't talk about.
Yeah. I'm excited for it. Are you ready?
I am ready.
You're stuck with me for life, dude.
We are moving forward with the beat and the badge, and hopefully people will find it useful.